Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's the Round Ball Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, LaFonso Ellis, Roy Marble, Joey Devine, Adonis Jordan, Mark Macon, Sean Keane, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Marcus Liberty, special guest Kevin O'Brien, musical guest The Raconteurs, and now the temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine.
Hey guys, it's me, your temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine. Welcome to the show. 1 week, I don't know why I'm having trouble introducing my own podcast, but I am. Sean Keane is here. Sean, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm great. Thank you.
We also have very funny comedian, basketball fan, Nebraska native, punk guy.
Whoa.
Kevin O'Brien.
Ball is life, yo. Ball is life. I love the Denver Nuggets shout out in the intro.
Yeah, that was a team that defeated George Karl's Seattle Supersonics at a time when...
8 seed.
Yeah.
Dikembe Mutombo hugging that ball and crying is like one of the indelible moments of my lifetime.
That is the only moment in Nuggets history that matters still to this day. They made the Western Conference Finals, yet the only clip that would ever be shown is just Dikembe scream crying, holding the ball over his head. And they're wearing the rainbow jerseys too.
Yeah.
Which is I think that might have been the last season they were doing the rainbow jerseys.
I would say the other great Denver Nuggets moment is when J.R. Smith dunked on Manu Ginobili and Kevin Harlan's like, "We just saw a man fly."
Yeah, that's a pretty fun one.
Yeah, it's a good clip for sure.
I don't think the Nuggets have a dunk champion, do they?
I think they do.
I'm not as familiar. That's the thing. I'm not a hardcore Nuggets fan. I'm a super die easy Nuggets fan.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing. They if I had been just a little bit older, if they'd been just a little bit better, like the Sonics were or continued to be, that I definitely would have been more into them because they were the closest team to where I grew up. But they sucked so bad through most of my childhood and then, through the anthem protest. Outrage.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And who would have thunk that would have been a big issue 20 years later? After after, yeah, anyway, so like,
yeah, if you're wondering, by the way, if George Carl makes fun of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's Tourette syndrome in his book, he does. Oh, he does. Doesn't mention the anthem, though.
Sean is listening to the George Carl book, and it's like a really funny thing.
Does he read it?
Yo.
Well, it came out a year ago.
Yeah.
More than a year
ago.
But
what's funny is Sean is texting me all the stuff that I texted him when I listened to it a year ago.
I'm just like, it's blowing my mind.
It's like, but it's literally like weird deja vu, except like the other way around, where Sean will be like, George Carl just made fun of Kendall Gill's depression.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. I remember that. I remember seeing that in the news. I read an excerpt of that. That's so funny.
It seems like he is a good coach, but like doesn't really like to prepare the whole time. He's like, these coaches call too many plays.
Yeah.
What's that? I just like the guys to freewheel and go out and just hit somebody.
Yeah.
And then he describes his team losing in the first round of the playoffs, which happens every year.
Okay, well, here's the thing, like with him, can you think of another coach who has had a greater diminishing returns of a career? Like, the longer he coached, the worse his legacy became.
Yes.
And the worse public opinion about him, like, gathered around that.
I think Lenny...
He got cancer and people hated him more.
Yeah.
I think Lenny Wilkins is comparable, actually.
But Lenny, nobody,
but
like,
no one hated Lenny
yeah.
Wilkins. That's the difference.
They got over him. They're like, what are we doing? So hiring Lenny? Like, this guy's getting by on, like, a couple hot years in this career. And then, yeah, before we knew it, he had a losing record. And he won, like, 100,000 games or something like that? Like, I don't know.
Well, and, like, the other difference is, like, Lenny Wilkins, wasn't he, like, an NBA champ as a player?
Yeah.
And he won one title as a coach or something.
And he won it in a down era.
Coach on that team.
Yeah, it was the Sonics in, like, 79.
Uh-huh.
So it was, like, a down era for the NBA. Like, all the good teams, their best players died of heart attacks from cocaine or something.
Oh, my God.
So then Lenny Wilkins and this scrappy group that he was also the coach of, like, backdoors their way into an NBA championship. Uh-huh. Then 20 years later, he's like loses 1,000 games as a coach, and he still gets hired by the Knicks, of course. You know, like
it's crazy to think that, because when George Karl gets fired from Denver,
that's where it really goes sour,
right,
on his like perception.
If he had not taken the new job with Sacramento, I think it still would have been like,
I don't know, man. The way it ended in Denver wasn't like that. Like those last couple years, it seemed like it was on the downward slope.
Well,
his last year, they won 55 games in the
he
world.
He wins coach of the year, too.
He was coach
and then
of the
he
year.
Gets fired.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to really be despised to get fired after being coach of the year and take, yeah, nobody thought that team was going to be what it was. But what happened to that team? Andre Iguodala,
yeah,
backstabbed that team on purpose because he wanted to go to the Warriors. Then told the Warriors on the court immediately after they lose the game, he's like, "Hey, I'm coming to you guys." And then before we know it, death lineup exists.
Yeah.
That's how dysfunctional that team was. And think about how great that team would have been if they didn't have George Karl as a coach. They won 57 games. They had a player who literally sabotaged his own team.
Yeah.
They all hated the coach. He won coach of the year. Then he gets fired. It's like nuts. That team could have won 65 games. That would have been like the Rockets or something.
I was at that game where they eliminated them.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Warriors eliminated them. And like it was their front court was so weird.
Yeah.
With like Fareed and JaVale and Mozgov.
JaVale, Mozgov, Danilo Gallinari. It was so weird. They're bigs.
I think Gallinari hurts his knee at the end of the year, too.
I think so, yeah.
But, yeah, it's...
That was the moment I jumped on the Warriors bandwagon, by the way, too.
Yeah, well,
I remember watching the end
up.
Of that series, and I was already kind of like softly into Warriors because I love Steph Curry. And I was big on Steph Curry bandwagon from the get-go, like in college, like a lot of people.
Well, because you're a college guy, aren't you? You like
sort of. Well, yeah, the assumption is like college basketball just because the Creighton Blue Jays are my favorite basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we didn't have an NBA team where I grew up. So that's what I'm saying. It was like I was a die-easy Nuggets fan. But then I got into the Nuggets in college when they drafted Melo. It was like the year before I moved there. I liked Melo when he played for Syracuse. Yeah. Now I despise Melo like everybody else. But but then it was easy to like get into him then when I was living there. And so I'd like, and they were pretty good for a while. So I was kind of a bandwagon fan. But I didn't have like that.
That
deep
Nuggets team is
childhood
weird.
Loved.
That mellow Nuggets,
there are dude, with so Iverson many strange and J.R. Smith and Kenyon Martin
and Nene
and the
Dante
fact that nobody
Jones, like it's
nobody
all...
got arrested, nobody got shot, like nobody got like nobody fought in the locker room.
Well, J.R. killed that guy.
Yeah.
No, I meant with each other.
Oh yeah.
No, that goes without saying. I mean, come on.
Like, they fought the Knicks that one time.
Like, if you had to bet on the what went down with the Wizards and, like, guns in the locker room happening, like, the money, like, the lead money would have been on that Nuggets team.
But
like,
isn't it?
Well, and then they add Ty Lawson, who's also, like, a secret bad character.
Yeah, dude. Reveals but we later. Didn't know until way later, yeah. Well, and he was, like, another guy who was, like, he was like, I think with like George Karl, I think Larry Brown might rival the decline in the way. George
oh
Karl
yeah,
was.
That's oh my the God. Guy. Actually,
but some
yeah.
of these guys, they love like these players. Like, oh, he plays the right way. He's like this sort of thing. But then you sort of see later on that some of these players are just kind of like scumbags. And then you see these coaches are just sort of like control freak, egomaniacs, and you're like, oh, maybe we were just the same thing. It's like the Marvin Harrison syndrome, you know? Like we like want to buy into this. Like, oh, this guy, he's like. He just, like, it's almost like politics. Like, if you can project this sort of, like, aura of, like, we do things the right way. We don't talk shit. We're not flashy, whatever. It's all about fundamentals. Meanwhile, a guy's, like, a drunk playing on the court. But it's like, well, he does what the coach says. It's like a coachable player kind of thing can mask, like, all these other, like, obvious, like, human problems.
The Marvin Harrison thing is so weird.
Yeah.
In
that's
like
the weirdest
NBA
one.
Terms, it would be like if Tim Duncan murdered someone yesterday.
Like, it, yeah, it, like if Latrell Sprewell was David Robinson. Yeah. Like,
and also, like,
be...
nothing happened afterwards. Yeah. Like, he just killed a guy with impunity, too? Because have there been any consequences for him?
It's at the point where some, like, sportscasters will still, like, point to him as, like, a model of good behavior as a player. Like, what? But they're like, oh, Reggie Wayne, he's from the U. He's flashy. Like, I don't like him. He's uppity or whatever. And then, but Marvin Harrison, like,
yeah, it turned out like, it would be like if it turned out Tim Duncan was like Breaking Bad. Like,
Walter White.
Well, and I mean, like Marvin Harrison, Tim Duncan has like his own auto body shop. So, which is like, I guess, his front for his murder business.
Where he makes Punisher cars. Did you know Tim Duncan has a Punisher car?
It's so funny.
He's a giant 13-year-old. Dweeb, dude. Yeah. Duncan's a dweeb, man.
So I think one of the reasons he has his own body shop is that he really likes cars, but he's so freakishly large he can't ride in a lot of them.
Dude,
and
I totally remember seeing this. It wasn't NBA inside stuff because it was way too late, but I remember seeing some package of a truck that he had that was custom built. So he could, like, sit in it comfortably.
Yeah.
Because he got sick of, like, having to, like, move seats all the way back or sometimes just taking the back seats out. And so, oh, man, that was...
Yeah.
That's got, like, lanky boy problems, you know? It's like the world is not made for guys over 6'5". I'm, like, right on the edge, thank God.
How tall are you?
6'3".
Wow.
I used to be 6'3½", but, you know. Age,
you're
baby.
Shrinking.
Yeah, you move to New York City, it'll beat you down.
Gravity is heavier there, so I think if I can get some space, my bones might loosen up. I might be able to get back up to 6'3".
Fiorello LaGuardia actually was like 6'2" when he moved there, and then
by the time he died, 3 foot,
three
two.
Foot one.
Jeez, what happened to him?
This is Round Ball Rock Reader Mail. Communications from listeners. Why do we call it reader mail? It is confusing for robots.
Let's get to it. We had some reader mail we've got to answer real quick.
Yeah.
So last week we talked about Gordon Hayward and how on his Twitch channel he told people he wanted Celtics fans to chant "Daddy's always happy" when he comes into the game.
Can we insert a clip
sound like? That's our first. And we discussed about how... There's no way. How do you even chant "Daddy's always happy"? Like, it doesn't work.
It sounds
as a
more
chant.
Like you, a chant you would do to the opposition, because it would be like "Daddy's always happy."
Yeah.
Dad, you know.
But we got so we talked about how difficult that is to chant. But our friend Corbin Smith, the host of the Take It or Break It podcast, sports writer from the Daily Beast. from BuzzFeed's morning show sent us a video of how you would chant "Daddy's always happy." So let's play that right now.
Daddy, daddy's always happy. Daddy, daddy's always happy. Daddy, daddy's always happy. Daddy, daddy's always happy.
And for those of you who can't see this because it's a podcast, Corbin is shirtless in bed, and it's the most disturbing thing I've ever seen.
I imagine he's a heavy blanket guy.
A weighted blanket?
Yeah.
Like, he loves what is a with weighted these weighted blanket. Blankets?
Guess it's
I'm
really...
never getting a weight. The last thing I need is another hurdle for me getting out of bed in the morning. Like, isn't the weight of the world enough to, like, what? How are you not? I already feel broken down enough by gravity. I don't need to be throwing more on top of me.
I'm just jealous that he lives in a climate that's cool enough to wear any blanket of any weight.
Anyway, readers, let us know how you feel about Corbin's weird chant.
Do we like the Corbin one or "Daddy's always happy"?
I like "Daddy's always happy." That I like the KOB version, Kevin O'Brien.
Is there some context? Is that like an internet joke that I don't get?
You're gonna hate what it's from.
Okay,
it's from a gender reveal video that Gordon Hayward posted that went viral. Where he said the phrase "Daddy's always happy."
I do hate that. I really do hate that.
But yeah, so we talked about last week how much we hate "daddy," just like the word "daddy." How I don't even think children should be saying it anymore because of how much we've ruined it.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I will say this, that my great uncle, who's over 80 years old, a retired Catholic priest in Nebraska. My great grandpa, his dad, lived to be like 99 years old, and until the day he died, he still referred to him as daddy, but in that old school, like,
sure,
kind of like post-war sort of way,
like,
you know,
like depressing, like incestuous Reconstruction Mississippi way.
No. I'm talking more in that sort of like. An antiquated way of speaking that did not age well. So
like
it's
people
like
people saying daddy is okay, I think, if it's that in that voice.
So he'd be like, oh, come on, daddy, let's go. Okay, like, I got you, daddy. You know, like,
you know, well,
that's
okay.
All right. That's okay.
Yeah. It's not quite like the "hey, daddy-o" sort of, but it is more of that time era. And so it is like, to me, that does have a little bit of a sweeter connotation, but if anything, that highlights what you're talking about, like how far
we've ruined it.
And it feels like it's like the last 10 years exclusively.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, it feels like the last like 3 years.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's been real accelerated.
Yeah.
I mean, as a New Yorker, I have become a huge sucker for poppy, though.
No, poppy's good.
Poppy's great.
I had no idea. If anything, I thought it was like a little bizarre before I lived in New York, like how poppy could be anybody or anything. Mm-hmm. It's like your kid. It's your kid's dad. Mm-hmm. It's some hot guy
at the
club.
Cat at the bodega.
It's the cat. It's it's somebody who you're working with. I mean, it's like I'm a huge sucker for it now.
Are there any NBA players you can think of who feel like directly a poppy?
I mean, it's
Al Horford is.
No, I mean,
it's got to be somebody from Boston. I think Big Poppy is so ingrained that it's hard to like live up to.
Well, I only
David Ortiz like Little Poppy, he's bigger than David Ortiz.
Al Horford is Lil Poppy. That's what we're gonna call him.
Lil Poppy,
Poppy,
Lil, no Lil, Lil Poppy,
Lil Poppy. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's any NBA player that can live up to a Poppy.
I feel like Nene would be whatever the Brazilian equivalent is.
Sure. Well, that's the other thing is that there are so few like Puerto Rican NBA players. Like,
well,
who's
that's
like
why I
Carlos
used
Arroyo?
Well,
who is like, that like?
Melo's not a poppy. Gilbert Arenas wasn't a poppy.
No. Karl Anthony Towns is not a poppy.
Yeah.
Not a poppy.
No. Not the poppy.
Not a poppy.
But the reason I brought up the daddy thing again, also because I wanted to make fun of Corbin's chant, but also at Trey Cool X, our listener asks, what are your thoughts on the word zaddy? Which is daddy with a Z.
I hate it.
I also hate it.
Am I understanding what zaddy means? It's like a stylish dude is a zaddy, like a stylish older dude. Is that what it means?
I'm unfamiliar.
I assume it's like, I just think it's like another version of daddy. I responded to this tweet with hate it. It's like sci-fi daddy.
Oh yeah, it's like the Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, yeah.
I am the daddy of the future.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
I am your zaddy.
Yeah.
Bow to General Zaddy.
How do we feel about Zoppy? That's the stylish Latino man at a bodega.
I'm very into that.
No, I don't like Zaddy at all. Yeah. I'm trying to think of any of those. Not that into Patty.
I love Patty. I have a friend named Patty.
Well, Patty with a T. I don't love it with a D.
Patty with a D, like the wagon.
His name is Patrick, so it would have to be with D's.
He's like Patrick Harrington. Kinda. Is your friend the golfer Patrick Harrington? Is that what we're talking about?
I didn't want to bring it up, but inadvertent name drop.
Zaddy's out.
Yeah, we're out on Zaddy. He also wants to know if Kawhi bit off Jimmy Fallon's dumb thank you letters sketch. With his and
the thank you, yeah, the thank you notes.
He was thanking everyone. I'm gonna say no. I don't think Kawhi Leonard's ever watched Jimmy Fallon.
I don't think Kawhi Leonard's ever watched anything. Look, he's so vacant that it seems like he just sits in a room staring at a wall. Like, I don't know what he enjoys.
You know what he would do if he was on Jimmy Fallon?
Wingstop.
He'd be like, "We got to play my favorite game, war." And then they would just silently play war for like five excruciating minutes.
I thought you were going to say solitaire, and then he just makes him watch Jimmy Fallon watch him play solitaire by himself.
Yeah, he doesn't want to play with a team.
He seems like a guy who would like be out in the woods by himself playing solitaire and just chopping wood.
I don't think he's a woods guy.
No,
either,
I don't think
though.
So. I think he's like an indoors guy.
I think
He's our most autistic NBA player that nobody talks about.
Kawhi Leonard is definitely the most likely NBA player in my lifetime to be a serial killer, I think.
He's got that vacant stare, man.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because Javaris Crittenden actually killed somebody.
Yeah, that's true. That's
and
true.
He brought guns into a locker room. And you're still like, I don't know, Kawhi. his hair seems a little ratty and he looks crazy, so...
I think Chris Kaman probably owned the most heavy artillery, I think.
Yeah.
You say that even though Jason Williams also killed a guy
but I mean, like,
with an armory full of guns.
But I have seen a video of Chris Kaman like machine gunning a Honda Accord.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I think I've also seen a video of Chris Kaman shooting a 50 caliber sniper rifle.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Anyways, Chris Kaman is the one who looks the most like a serial killer.
He does look the most like a serial killer.
But he's too public.
But he's most likely to be like Cliven Bundy.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, like if we found out that like Chris Kaman was in the Grand Tetons like with a militia, it would be like
it wouldn't be that big a shock.
Yeah, Chris Kaman's got a real Busey thing going on.
But I
think
guess
it's something about being huge and blonde. You just can't be huge and blonde.
I want to say he used to play paintball in his house in L.A.
Whoa.
And he's known for
just... That's a real Camp Nowhere movie.
Yeah. And I think every year he spends like $5,000 on his own like personal fireworks display for everybody in his neighborhood.
You know, he's just a big fun kid.
Don't get JPP'd.
I want to say he's also straight edge.
Really?
I don't think that's true.
No, like, he's not into Earth Crisis.
Well, he's not like...
He just doesn't drink.
I think he doesn't drink. Right. Yeah. What if he became a vegan?
Dude, if he was SXE, he'd be my favorite player immediately.
He was playing games with the X's drawn on his hands.
Yeah. I just would love that because of like how bold of an individual you'd have to be to fit in the NBA and still do that. It's why I always had a little bit of love, not to keep bringing it back to the Nuggets, but Birdman, dude. Like,
oh, Birdman rules, dude.
Just the way that he was able to, like, he was not what any of, he did not come from the background of any of his teammates. And culturally, was not even like one of us as a white guy either.
No.
He was like... He was out there on some different plane that he was just a wild man. He was like, Rodman was the only person that maybe had like a similar approach to him, which was just like, I think they were just were both like hardcore addicts. And so they were just like, they didn't have to blend in because they were so distinctly themselves.
What's
you know
crazy about Birdman is the tattoos come after the drug problem.
Don't they often?
I know they do often, but like those tattoos are wild, man.
Yeah.
That Birdman's neck is crazy.
I didn't realize that he actually considered Birdman to be like an alter ego to pump himself up for games.
That's when the hair came in, because when he started with the Nuggets, he was like some scrawny
hick
from like some small college, and he had a shaved head, and he was like underweight.
Well, and then he had, if you remember in the horrific dunk contest moment, which, you know, he has like the Kyle Korver haircut.
Yeah. But then he transitioned from that, and then he went gelled and went straight up wearing the sweatband around. And then that's when the Nuggets transitioned to like the powder blue jerseys, which huge mistake, but whatever. And
I like the powdered blue jerseys more than the jerseys they have now.
Well, because they're too scared to just go back to the, like,
I don't know why they don't go back.
They softly do. They're too like, because you see what they're doing now. It's so close to what it was in the late 90s. That, like, once they go back to late 90s thing, then they'll hopefully go back to the, like, late 80s thing, which is, like, the Colorado State flag, the rainbow jersey. Yeah.
Like,
it's too conservative.
Rainbow Nuggets, it's, like, everyone's favorite jersey.
But
all right.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack.
No, don't worry.
No,
podcast is.
I didn't realize how weird his upbringing was, that his dad was a Danish immigrant who was also a prison guard.
His mom
like,
was
imagine
hardcore,
going to America.
Dude. His mom was so hardcore that when he, like, when I think it was get him either back into the NBA or when he's going to college, something like that, they've, like, packed up all their belongings, like, drove up, like, from the middle of nowhere, like, 12 hours from where he is in wintertime, and she's in her Harley, and she's just stuffing, like, newspapers into her, like, her leather jacket, like, following behind him for 12 hours in, like, 20-degree weather. Because he, like, they couldn't trust him to be on his own or whatever, because he had been like doing drugs and blowing
it. Well, and he got catfished too.
That was crazy.
And oh yeah, it's nuts. He's that guy's lived
crazy.
And then came back
catfish.
Two different times.
Yeah, LeBron fucking loved him too. He was like one of LeBron's favorite teammates.
He got him a ring.
Yeah,
because LeBron loved him so much.
He's in the big three now.
I bet he's crushing in the big three.
All right. Our next question comes from @DiamondMike. A guy I went to high school with. He asks, on the next pod, how does Doug McDermott's agent not have every other player as a client? He must be the absolute best of all time.
I love that this question came in when we had a Creighton super fan here.
Doug McDermott is my second favorite Blue Jay of all time.
Who's your first?
Kyle Korver.
Yeah, of course. How have you appreciated Doug McDermott's NBA career?
I think he's being treated a little unfairly because of Jimmer Fredette. That is like, that is like my, it's almost conspiracy theory, but I think that his game is not appropriately valued because of expectations of what's happened to other players maybe similar to him before him. You know what I mean? Like, and he's not quite like, people are acting like he's just a dude who chucks up threes, but a lot of his game happens like mid range in the post and stuff. And he just
he's a pretty good post player, actually.
Yeah.
Weirdly.
And so he can do a couple different things. Just defensively, he's not super great. So then that's where he gets like Jimmer comparisons. And he hasn't really had a chance to thrive in any system. Like, he gets bounced so quickly around in trades.
The Bulls for a long time.
What, 2.5 seasons? That's not even, like, it wasn't even through his, he didn't make it through his rookie contract.
Yeah.
So, like, if you don't make it through your rookie contract with one team, then you're with another, and then you switch teams within 6 months of that, and then you get a situation with the Knicks where it seems like it might work out for him because there's nothing the Knicks love more than a guy with a hot hand that can give a nickname and throw on the front page of New York Post. But it's also why those guys kind of burn out. So he just like, he's a guy, like, I'm sure you probably will have a decent career, like pretty long. Like, I don't know if that's going to be Kyle Korver long, but he's definitely going to play upwards of 10 seasons But he might not get a fair shake until he's in his 30s and he's a guy on a championship team making a run and then he finds like a Swiss Army knife role.
I've got to think, though, he's going to get a fair shake here, A, because he's in Indiana and they love
a white guy. Love a white guy in Indiana, especially a corn-fed one from Iowa.
Yeah.
Who, like, his dad's a coach. Funny. Yeah, you're right. That, like, culturally checks a lot.
And they paid him a lot.
Yeah.
They paid him a lot.
They believe
he's been on, like, 5 teams in 4 years.
And think about who runs that team, but the total archetype of the white guy player who can do a little bit of everything is Larry Bird.
Larry Bird doesn't run the team anymore.
Oh, what?
It's Kevin Pritchard, who also loves white guys.
Yeah. Well, that was his protege. Yeah. Pritchard was his protege. That's right. Oh yeah, when Larry left
Bird
last year.
Bailed when it seemed like he was going to have to trade Paul George. And
that's
he
right.
Was like,
I forgot about that.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun that he's going to get to reunite with Victor Oladipo to just be like, man,
they really
misused
there.
Us. Yeah. In Oklahoma City.
Yeah. If anything, I think
score
that'll
some
be
points.
After the season Oladipo had last year, and now, and it seems like that's a team that's on the rise too, and then McDermott coming in. I think that's going to have a huge influence on like just the mentality of the team and really just continuing to like stick it to being traded and like discarded players essentially, you know?
I mean,
it's Hoosiers, baby. They're like, they want this, like they'll be this like kind of scrappy underdog team that they might come in like second place in the Eastern Conference next year.
Well, I think it's also they're making strides towards that Hickory model because they got McDermott.
Yeah.
TJ Leaf, Sabonis,
yeah.
Bogdanovich, and even like some of the black players they have names like Victor and
Miles.
Yeah, Miles and Victor, like Thad.
Yeah.
Thaddeus?
Yeah.
All of the, you just squint your eyes a little bit and if you're an economically anxious Indiana fan, you're in heaven.
So I think Mike was asking because he feels like Doug McDermott got grossly overpaid, which
I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yes, but Sean did some digging.
So okay. this is
Doug McBucket's agent is Mark Bartlestein. And let me read you some of his.
Hold on. That is one of the best names I've heard in a while. Bartlestein.
Yeah.
That's the best name to yell at somebody.
Bartlestein.
Bartlestein.
But let me read you some of his other clients. Will Barton.
He really got paid this offseason.
Joe Harris.
Also really got paid.
Yeah. Joe Ingles.
Got incredibly paid last summer.
Uh-huh. James Johnson.
Also got a giant contract last summer.
Uh-huh. Jabari Parker.
Got $20
overpaid.
Million this year.
Yeah. All the Plumleys.
Two of the Plumleys have like two of the
worst
contracts
in the
and
NBA.
One of them shouldn't even be in the NBA.
And then, yeah, like Marshall, I mean, he has overachieved incredibly in his time.
Jason Smith.
Also got a pretty big contract that he opted into this year, weirdly.
And finally, Garrett Temple.
Yeah, Garrett Temple also making like $8 million a year.
This agent's model is like a guy who gets rich off running a flea market business. Like it's just grabbing like real, like mid-level goods, people that other agents probably don't want, and then he's just like maximizing their value at the perfect time because these are all like the same caliber of NBA player, more or less.
Like
too.
Like Lance Stevenson, he is Michael Porter Jr.'s agent. Does he have any like stars really?
I mean, but think about
Etuan Moore.
Michael Porter Jr. might not be a star, you know. And if that's a star agent, that guy was the last pick in the lottery to the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of I can't find like a big star here, but it's a lot of guys who have made some money.
Yeah.
Kwame Brown's agent, or is Kwame Brown's agent? I don't know if he needs representation for his big three deal.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But yeah, a lot of people where you're like, huh, didn't Wade Baldwin IV get released? And it's like, now he's got a 3-year deal, baby.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's so funny, too, if you like think of like all the things that exist in the NBA's like structure now with the salary cap and all that stuff. It was a result of owners just blowing it and giving money. It's like that Gilbert Arenas contract essentially is like the reason that the modern NBA exists the way that it does. And even still, you see all these contracts and like teams like the Trailblazers or whatever that are like overpaying
Evan Turner
and the like because they just had the space and they're like, all right, well, I guess we'll get it. The fact that like being a max contract player is not necessarily special anymore.
Uh-huh.
It's just like a default to fill the books. Then it's like, well, this is the same sort of behavior that existed before. It's just now within the confines that you created to like prevent this behavior.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where it's like, you know, you don't have to spend the cap space, right? Like it doesn't go away.
But I think some of these people do, like they look at it like some of these owners, they see it as like revenue, right? So if it's like revenue coming in, then like we got to invest it going back out. Like they don't ever really want to have a lot of cash on hand.
But also sign a 1-year deal then.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying, that now the true Supermax players are signing 1 or 2 year deals because that's like the one, now that's become the one area where you can have leverage.
Yeah.
So then everybody else is getting like these fraudulent, bloated 3-year max contracts in the same way Gilbert Arenas got like, what is it, 5 or 6 year 200 something mm-hmm. million dollars. So now that's become what the max is.
The amazing thing about that,
the couple of super maxes that people have signed, like the Russell Westbrook one and the James Harden one, are gonna cripple those teams eventually.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like the same thing, but within a different structure now.
So how many people have signed super maxes at this
point?
Steph, Harden, Westbrook. Is that it?
I think that did Wall get one?
Oh, Wall got one too.
Oh man, that
Wall also has a Supermax.
Yeah,
it hasn't even kicked in yet.
Did you see that photo of him at USA Basketball?
He's
bloated,
dude.
He looks cool as hell, though. I will say, in that USA Basketball photo, I was like, I want to be friends with you now. Like, but I never really cared for John Wall's whole sort of like aura or whatever. Like, even through college, I was like, this guy looks lame as hell. And he thinks he's fun and cool, but he's really not. You know,
here's
like
what
that
I like about John Wall is he is weirdly a throwback to the late 90s.
Ew.
You know what I mean? Where like everyone else is like, I'm working so hard this off season.
Sure.
And John Wall is like, I'm hosting this party with rappers.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I was so charmed by his USA Basketball photo, because his hair looked cool, his beard looked cool.
Yeah,
he looked like he had like been out till 3, and then they woke him up at like 6. He's like, "Oh shit! All right, dude. All right, what are we doing?" It reminded me when I was an RA in college, and I'd show up drunk to like meetings at 7 a.m. or something like that.
I mean, we do kind of miss that. People talk about like, oh, the NBA is great. Oh, these guys really care about their bodies and work out all the time. And it's like, what if we just convinced everybody to dial it back like 10%,
like loosen up or what?
I feel like the product would not be discernibly different, and these guys could have a lot more fun.
I disagree. Those games were regular season games back then were really bad a lot of the time.
It feels like everybody's like.
Do you really want Steven Jackson smoking weed before the game and you smell it on him and he looks high as hell?
I do want that.
Like,
you do?
Like, we have it. The world
you're
is already.
$70 if you're getting a bunch of beers sitting there watching these guys, like, barely try.
I'm just saying, I don't like that in society the default is to work like a 60 hour week now. And I feel like.
Sure,
NBA,
I agree. You know what? I think there's a total middle ground, and it was the 90s, like the early to mid 90s, where it was like. Guys weren't like these freak athletes, but they also weren't like these Allen Iverson could pull it off, but a lot of other guys couldn't, of like living this like crazy rock and roll
being like.
But those guys are the worst. Like, none of those guys lived up to their potential.
Exactly.
If you look at it, like,
that's what I'm saying. It's better now the way that it is.
Yes.
But I think in the 90s it was a perfect like balance between. It wasn't like this, everybody's on cocaine, 70s insanity or whatever, but it wasn't like what it is today where everything's very like kind of rigid. These guys are almost like tech bros as like athletes. You know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I also don't like that so many basketball fans on Twitter are like cops about people's offseason routine. Like, oh, that guy came in 10 pounds overweight, or look at this. Like, I hate the self-glorifying, like, hoodie mellow in the gym video. Like, Do I have to care about what this guy's doing in the off season? Can he not be at work for 2 months a year, maybe?
Yeah, I agree with you, but you have to also keep in mind like the rise of Instagram with this shift in NBA culture. Like they sort of like Twitter and that stuff happened kind of simultaneously with David Stern putting in the dress code and then the 1 year out of high school rule and all that stuff kind of like happened, coincided with the advent of social media. So this stuff like is so ingrained with each other now at this point that it's like, I don't see it ever like chilling out or going back to the way it was.
No, like, if anything, it's going to get more intense.
We just need universal basic income to change the way that our whole society thinks about that kind of thing.
Agree.
So Sean is an advocate of flat salaries for every NBA player across the board. It's very libertarian of you, Sean.
Well, I'm not flat salaries.
Universal basic income. In the NBA would mean everybody gets paid the same, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
It would mean that
every basketball player in America gets a paycheck.
No, but I mean the NBA actually does kind of have universal basic income because it's like they have a minimum that you have to get paid.
Oh, so that's the minimum's like, the UBI.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just saying, I think you should be able to actually take time off. Your job.
I agree 100%. Like, especially
whether
if you're
a basketball writer or a basketball player. Sure. You know what I mean?
But unfortunately, it's just not the way the world works anymore. Or maybe ever did.
Well, you know, but you know who takes a lot of time off? Klay Thompson.
That's true. That's true.
He
has a good life work
so young,
balance.
You know?
Yeah. Klay Thompson has the best life work balance of anyone in the NBA, I think.
Yeah, it just feels like he stays in really good shape, but by like walking his dog and going for runs with a dog.
Yeah. And like swimming in the Bahamas with Instagram models.
It's really
and
funny
then he
that
shoots a lot and yeah.
It's funny that him and Steph Curry are the Splash Brothers because I think the same thing about Steph Curry where it's like his off season, he was playing in a pro-am golf tournament. And then, like, shot, like, near the top as an NBA player. He's like, you just staying in shape by, like, playing golf.
Except
and
Steph
hanging
Curry's,
out with his family.
Steph Curry's
you know?
Workout routine is also insane,
yeah, it's,
though.
Like, really weird and like, intense and strange. Like, it all involves, like, weird
like
lights and, like, dribbling three basketballs at the same time.
Flash strobe lights in his eyes while he's dribbling three basketballs and throwing a tennis ball at a guy.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
He basically works out in Tron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if he didn't seem like the spoiled kid in the NBA enough, then it's like, his workout routine is just in a VR simulator.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our first story.
Yeah.
We have gone, an hour without talking about any story? This is great.
Yeah. We're only 40 minutes into the podcast. Whatever. We got through reader mail.
All right. So, James Dolan, the owner of the Knicks.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
It came out last week.
The NBA's greatest blues man.
It came out last week that his band, JD and the Straight Shot, wrote a song about Harvey Weinstein,
uh-huh.
who is...
Wait, pro or con?
Con, but...
Con,
it's because
but...
he's his friend. It's... Let me read
Let's
you.
Let, yeah,
same
just read us some lyrics. Read us some lyrics here.
It's called "I Should Have Known."
Oh no! Oh no! Don't
and,
do this.
And are
JD.
You? Yeah, it's definitely he definitely blurs. It's definitely apostrophe VE too.
Why don't we put in a sample here?
Yeah,
we'll
I think I can find
right
it.
Now.
Yeah.
We were friends, talked for hours without end about his latest story, how to deal with fame and glory. All the girls who adored him catered to his every whim. Nothing he could lose, all he needed.
I should have known, I should have known, I should have thrown myself across his tracks, stopped him from these vile attacks. I should have known. We believed and didn't see through the lies he told us all. They led him to his endless fall. I should have known. I should have known.
I gotta say, he is somewhat describing Harvey Weinstein as like a Balrog from Lord of the Rings. That's what I think of for an endless fall.
Oh, I thought he was reminding me of Lisa Simpson when Snowball died. I had a cat named Snowball. She died. Like,
so yeah, apparently James Dolan was really good friends with Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, not only that, he's on the board of directors for the Weinstein Company, I believe, along with Mark Lazary, owner of the Bucks.
I think this speaks so perfectly to who James Dolan is, because anybody else that would have that sort of association in a position of power in the way that James Dolan does would do what they can to disassociate themselves from it, give a quick statement, whatever, remove themselves from whatever board they're attached to. No, what James Dolan does is he writes a bad poem about it that he uses to somehow name drop his connection to this person, but then also make it about himself.
Yeah, he made
as in he's somehow
like he's the victim.
He was like a martyr for his connection or something like that.
You know what you didn't know about James Dolan? Isaiah Thomas, and you keep hiring him.
Yeah, he knew. Like, yeah, he had to pay to, like, he had paid that settlement for the sexual harassment and everything. And after doing so, out of his own pocket,
continues
paid for it.
To hire him.
Yeah.
He runs a WNBA franchise.
For you, James Dolan. Maybe you should throw yourself across those tracks.
But also, like I should have known is, like, he's saying it, like, in a wistful way. And it's like, no, legally you should have known because of your corporate responsibility as a board member for his company. Like,
that song should have been called You Knew.
I knew.
Like, we, come on, man.
I didn't think anyone would find out. Or your face ended up in this pout.
I want to hear his follow up. I didn't care. I didn't care.
Do you want to see a picture of what he looks like when he sings?
Of course. Don't assume that I haven't watched a number of live performances of JD the Straight Shot.
He played this song last week on Fox 5 TV, and then
that a Fox affiliate would want to air an apology
like
that.
JD and the Straight Shot were supposed to play a benefit show for the Apollo Theater at a rich guy's house in the Hamptons this week. Here's who else was playing that benefit. Sting and Shaggy together.
Right, they're touring, of course. By the way, you imagine, like, if
are
Sting
they on
and
stage together at the same time?
Yeah, they're like,
they're singing
they
each other's
album
songs
out together.
Oh my! I missed this entirely.
Don't stand so close to me. That's my Shaggy.
It's two people pretending to be Jamaican.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, if Sting and Shaggy had collaborated on "It Wasn't Me"?
Oh yeah.
Because the song would be like, you know, buck naked, banging on the bathroom floor. And then they'd have to have all these verses because he was having sex for like 8 hours.
Tantric mix of?
Yeah, like it wasn't me. Like, you were there for 9 hours, buddy. It's very obviously you.
So Sting and Shaggy.
You had that weird Algerian guy singing accompaniment for it, too.
So Sting and Shaggy, The Roots.
Whoa.
John Bon Jovi. It's unclear if it was Bon Jovi or just John Bon Jovi.
Well, either way, when I think of the Apollo Theater, I think of John Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Chaka Khan.
Whoa.
The Apollo Theater would be like, we want Sambora.
and Chris Martin from Coldplay.
Another titan of the blues. Yeah.
Other people who were there, Bon Jovi. And Robert Kraft from the Patriots were... the owner of the Patriots, Robert Kraft.
Who gave the, a
and
Super...
This is the
did he give Trump a Super Bowl ring?
Yeah, he did give Trump a Super
Bowl
ring.
And he accidentally gave one to Putin, too.
Yeah,
but
I think he also gave one to Meek Mill, because he's friends with Meek Mill.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know how you're friends with Meek Mill and Donald Trump.
You're a billionaire. You give money. That's what I guess I was about to say it's insane that this is the guest list and the lineup for an Apollo fundraiser in the Hamptons, no less.
Yeah, Chaka Khan is the only one that makes sense.
Uh-huh. The Roots.
Yeah, the okay, the Roots, yeah.
But even it's like, but then again, it's like, well, that's, if when you're a billionaire, you just give money to everybody. It's not like the Apollo is going to turn down the money. So that, like, then you can have these connections to these people, you know? I don't know. It's it's very weird.
But then
it makes a lot of sense if you think about it.
Questlove did do Slow Jam, the sexual harassment complaint, though, and that was pretty good.
It's funny that Sting and Shaggy played because it wasn't me is what Harvey Weinstein was telling James Dolan for years.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. Woo! Good joke, Joey.
That is, that's a hot fire coming from Joey.
Also,
Devine.
James Dolan was shocked when he's like, the song's not boobastic. Okay. I thought it was about boobs.
So they were supposed to play this benefit, JD and the Straight Shot, and the organizers of the benefit were like, hey, JD, could you maybe not play your Harvey Weinstein song? And James Dolan was so offended that he wasn't allowed to play it.
He's usually such a chill guy.
Yeah, that he pulled JD and the Straight Shot out of the lineup entirely.
What?
Which,
no!
Which made that show
JD
so...
JD, don't go!
Which...
Once again, perfectly speaks to his character. The delusion of thinking that, like, well, I'm taking a stand and people are going to be... bummed out. It's your loss. Your funeral, man. You don't let me.
People love my music. They love.
We've opened
Harvey
for the
Weinstein.
Eagles, all right?
Yeah, yeah. We opened for a lot of bands that Madison coincidentally play at the arena that I own personally. Well, so I guess it means that James Dolan, because he was not allowed a Harvey Weinstein song, denied the Apollo Theater a bunch of fundraising.
Well, I don't know if Dolan... I don't know if JD and the Straight Shot playing were going to change who was showing up to that concert.
Yeah, I'm guessing he also had, like, a financial contribution.
Oh, for sure.
So let me read you guys a quote. this is from an unnamed source. It was given to Page Six. So I'm sure it's from James Dolan himself or James Dolan's... lackey. Quote, they asked him to perform a different song instead. He was shocked that the Apollo would tell an artist how and what to perform. Not many other men are singing about this.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. Not many other men are singing about
this. Yeah, I think that's kind of the point, James Dolan.
Because you could also say that with JD and the Straight Shots, Holocaust denial song. There's not a lot of people singing about that, but like...
Very good point.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a
I should have known it was a Zionist hoax. It was weird, but yeah, he wasn't allowed to play that one either.
Yeah. Did you guys know that JD and the Straight Shot appear on the motion picture soundtrack to the Bill Murray film St. Vincent?
No. Whoa.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I think I've even seen St. Vincent.
So the question is, does James Dolan own an independent film distributor, and that's how he got
this? Yeah, he was on the board of the Weinstein Company.
Oh, wow. I wonder who produced the Bill Murray vehicle, St. Vincent. Wow, Sean, who on earth... would have been...
Let's check the production.
The financier to that film. Because, you know, James Dolan...
The Weinstein Company released the film on October 10th, 2014.
Well, what
it's
do you
amazing.
Know? It's striking. James Dolan usually books so many gigs just on his artistic merit. And that's probably why he's used to people not telling him what to do, huh? That's it?
Well, you know, noted respecter of women, Bill Murray, is a good...
You're just banging the drum on that. John is not going to let us have Bill Murray.
All right. Should we move on to anything?
I guess so. I'm trying to find his IMDb page.
James Dolan's?
Yeah.
You imagine the parade that is going to happen once the Knicks are officially sold?
August Osage County also has a James Dolan song in it.
Also released by the Weinstein Company.
It's gotta be, right?
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, yeah.
If
Here's
not,
the funny
I want,
thing
I
just
talk
learned about this, by the way.
Yeah.
You know who sits on the board of the Apollo Theater?
Who's that?
James
it's a Weinstein.
No, James Dolan.
James Dolan.
So he's essentially fighting his own... He just denied...
he denied himself! That's how you... That is hilarious. That's how you know you're extremely rich. When you can... You're firing yourself... Or you're quitting yourself and you don't even realize it. And people just suffer you because they do. And they're like, all right, if this is your game, I don't know what to tell you, man. Sure, go ahead. All right, you're out of here. Like, oh my God, that's too good.
I need to correct myself about August.
Yeah.
Osage County or Osage County. I don't know.
Osage.
Right?
Yeah.
Osage County. James Dolan wrote 3 songs for the soundtrack.
Oh Jesus Christ. All right, we're moving on. So I think we need to talk about CJ McCollum's summer.
What a
Sean,
summer.
Do you want to run
what happened
through?
To CJ?
So
I don't follow him on Instagram.
So his most notable thing.
Oh, the podcast?
Was the
well,
podcast.
He brought it up again yesterday.
Because he
still.
The Kevin Durant thing just didn't go. He was really sunned by Kevin Durant. I think that's the best description of what happened.
Yeah.
Durant just flexed on him.
Yeah.
And so CJ McCollum, I guess, was talking about, he said something, he had another interview where he talked about how he would never, ever join a super team.
Yeah, ooh. He said that on Chinese TV. He was like, I'm born different. I would never ring chase.
That is so, I'm like, that is the lamest way to seem like you're cool. You know,
yeah, it seems weird to be like...
That's like a kid that becomes a libertarian just because nobody else is doing it.
But
like,
also, the subtext of it is, I don't care about winning.
Yeah, ultimately. Yeah,
like,
that is
I
what
would
it,
never join a good team because, like...
But it's also just so old hat, too, you know? Like, it's the kind of, it's like it's such a cliche now. It's the kind of thing that, like, basic people say to, like, sound interesting.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, 11 years after Ray Allen and Kevin Durant went to the Celtics, you don't like super teams?
Yeah.
Like, also, you're 26. Who ring chases?
Yeah.
Anyway, he... So his response, he tweeted... We're being like SportsCenter here. We're reading athletes' tweets out loud. Y'all stay bringing up old stuff. Y'all got me out here looking like a bitter ex. One of the best teams ever assembled with 2 players you could argue are top 15 greatest to lace them up. 4 Hall of Famers with another one on the way. I'm happy. Stop making me look like a scorned man. Sheesh.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
then,
now I like him because I say sheesh.
Well,
sheesh.
Sheesh has become... Klay Thompson said sheesh like... 3 years ago.
And now LeBron
and
says
LeBron,
it all the time.
Yeah, LeBron says awesome. Sheesh all the time. Sheesh is like it's like the new NBA catchphrase, I think.
Cool.
We're living in the sheesh era.
It is.
Yeah. But so then, because he said they have 4 Hall of Famers,
mm-hmm.
Andre Iguodala, who is hilarious, quote
and
tweeted
also
at him,
a Benedict Arnold.
Sure.
Traitor to the Denver Nuggets.
Tweeted at him. I don't know why he tweeted at Brandon Jennings here, but he says, see, Brandon Jennings, he said 4. He think I'm trash.
See? Sean brought up a good point about the NBA players should be allowed to just lay off, get time off. But this is what has made it a 12-month leave.
Oh,
now,
yeah. I mean,
they are just the most perfect... arrested teenage petty shade queens.
Yeah.
Like even LeBron, the greatest of his generation, maybe of all time, still is acting like he's got haters.
Well,
and he's up on Instagram and he's being like cryptic. He's subtweet. I mean, like he was vague booking Kevin Love like 2 seasons
fit
ago.
Fit in or
you know
fit
I mean?
Out.
Yeah. Like,
what?
Which is actually.
You're the best player in the world.
Yeah. Daryl Morey says that analytics say he's the best player ever and it's not even close. That's what Daryl Morey said yesterday.
Yeah.
Still, just like, oh, my haters.
It's also a weird thing. It's what separates, it's what make, what I think separates Steph Curry from everyone else. It's like Steph Curry's Instagram is just like, here's a picture of me and my beautiful family over and over and over.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when I'm
tough
thinking,
day
like,
golfing. Yeah. Good day golfing.
Like, when I think of his off season, it's just like the most like square suburban dad kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so the
But then the best thing that happened here, the NBA got the greatest catchphrase,
and
it's had it since the Paul George. I'm gonna say since the Paul Pierce rocket emoji. This is
this
the
is
best NBA.
So
tweet since
so
then.
Twitter user at Chalk Delight 1980.
Ooh,
C H O C like chocolate.
Name,
not,
her name is Jennifer.
Jennifer
like
Williams.
The, yeah. Tweeted what, Sean?
Win a playoff game, then talk.
Ooh. And then CJ McCollum tweeted, I'm trying, Jennifer.
It's so
Man,
funny.
CJ, come on.
What it reminds me of is that dog rating tweet where the guy's like, they're good dogs.
Poor CJ. He just reminds me of like a kid who just is trying to like bulldog his way into a friend group, but just has no ability to do it. You know, he's just too much of a dweeb. He's like punching outside his weight class.
Yes.
Constantly. It's like he has no sense of himself to stay in his lane. So he's like, it's like almost like this annoying kid brother kind of thing where it's like, get out of here, man. Like,
yeah. And Kevin Durant
he's like stepping
did that
into
to
it.
Him on his own podcast.
Exactly.
Where he was like, hey, you'd make a pretty good six man on a good team, right?
He's like, six man, but I'm a starter. And they're like, yeah, sure you are, dude. Self-awareness goes a long way, CJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But keep trying, Jennifer.
Jeez.
I'm trying, Jennifer. I'm trying, Jennifer is so funny.
Yeah. There's something like
that's a great emo band.
So I used to when I was a senior in high school, I spent a lot of time writing fake letters to the local newspaper.
Of course,
because they
were that kid.
Yeah, of course I did that because there was a teen talk section where teens could like weigh in.
Oh boy!
And so I'd like write in with fake identities and like no one really wrote in.
Oh,
so my job, I just wanted like more content. And the best way to get people to reply was I had one of my personas, my Birdman, per se.
Yeah.
Would just constantly use people's first names in replies. And so it would just be like, Matthew, you don't understand what you're talking about. I think you're the one who was racist, not the police in Pleasant Hill, Matthew. And there's something about using someone's first name that like, both makes it quaint and infuriating
yeah.
at the same time.
Like, it makes
like
you
this
feel
like
was
a very
child.
Sweet, yeah. But yeah, but like it's such a like patting them on the head
yeah.
verbally kind
exactly.
of thing.
There's like there's an inherent condescension because of the connotation of like being a kid and somebody like saying your name.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That's if anything, that's what was driving people nuts when Zuckerberg would say senator every time.
Oh yeah,
his, you know, where it, like I would think that was a like deliberate act. Like,
oh, totally, yeah.
You know.
I can't think of it a funnier name than Jennifer, though. It's, like, so perfect for, like...
Jennifer Aniston is, like, peak Jennifer's.
Yeah,
too. Like,
but
that's,
I just
like,
mean,
that's the truest archetype.
But it's not
Jennifer.
It's not Jenny. It's
but
three
the
syllables.
Of Jennifer yeah. and I'm trying is
I'm
just,
trying,
like,
Jennifer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying, Jennifer is, like, it's like you said, it's like a...
It's like an emo song.
Yeah,
it's like
it's
a pop
like,
song or something.
I was
like.
Going to say it sounds like a like an early Conor Oberst song.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm trying, Jennifer. Yeah. And then there's like a 15-word sentence in parentheses.
Yeah, yeah. Like
I'm trying, Jennifer. The bell breaks when the whiskey spills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, you tell me, I'm a huge Conor Oberst fan.
Well, yeah, you have to be. It's... Right.
And I mean, for the age I was and the way I was and where I was. Yeah.
He should write a song about CJ McCollum. That's just like, I'd never join a super team.
If anything, I need to get in touch with CJ and recommend some Bright Eyes to him because that'll help him find a path that'll like he'll be able to get his catharsis out because I know how he's feeling right now. I'd made moves like CJ and fell flat on my face because I wasn't equipped for whatever sort of power move I went for.
But
and
also,
then,
and here's something: he is trying. He's clearly trying to win those playoff games.
So, like, maybe he could kind of like heal himself and then find a route of like self-acceptance via Bright Eyes the same way that
Connor
I did.
But Connor Oberst is the wrong person for CJ McCollum because Connor Oberst has joined multiple super teams.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, man, what if he was into Connor Oberst and he was like, with Jenny Lewis? Not me, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Like, don't tell him that Connor was in super groups later. So then get him hooked on Bright Eyes. And like, hey, CJ, you know you have Bright Eyes? Like, yeah. He's like, check out Monsters of Folk. Desaparecido. He's like, what? No. It's like, yeah, CJ, you got to let go, dude. Just join a super
He's
team.
Been in multiple bands with Tim Kasher.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Do you think there's a point when, like, he gets too in his head about this and they're like, congratulations, CJ. You're going to be joining Team USA for the World Championships. And he's like, not me, man. Not me.
No super teams.
No super teams, dude.
The only problem with that is CJ McCollum is not good enough to play on Team USA.
I was going
to
say, what plane crash on the way to preliminaries?
I think he'd be a good fit because he shoots threes. But yeah, like Klay Thompson doesn't want to play on the Olympics every year. Actually, he does want to play on the Olympics every year. Never mind. International travel and,
national
and just
pride.
Just shooting.
Yeah.
Like,
all right. Let's move on. The Clippers fired Bruce Bowen for trash talking.
Oh, yes. Thank you, yeah. Yes. I did not know we were going to talk about this. I've been thinking about this for days. Please go on.
And he trash talked him so long ago.
It was
too.
A long time ago. Now I'm conflicted about this because I'm always pro firing Bruce Bowen.
Oh. Why?
Get that bow tie out of here.
He's dirty. He's bad at that job.
Oh, well,
Andy wears a bow tie, and he's just real annoying.
See, I'm not familiar with his color work, so.
But Clippers.
What's going on
there? You're not going to sign Kawhi.
All right, two things. First of all, he was only shit-talking him in the Kawhi universe. Like,
yes.
Well, the way that, like, over the past year plus, the way the bar has been moved on shit talk, but just for Kawhi specifically,
yeah.
What constitutes shit talk or insults or whatever is so minimal at this point.
Yeah.
Now that, like, the reason that he wanted to leave is because Tony Parker, not even talking necessarily about Kawhi, but he's like, oh, my injury was worse. He's just saying that he felt worse about his injury, but Kawhi's like, oh, my injury's bad too. Like, so it gets like, and then Bruce Bowen said hardly anything that critical at all, or something that's not obvious to the human eye.
What,
like,
did Bruce Bowen say exactly?
Well,
Sean?
let me, he just responded today on Dan Patrick's show as well. So let me give you the, let me give you these original comments. Sorry. He basically said, like, I'm going to just find this. He said, okay, so this is what he said on Sirius XM Radio. He said, I think there's nothing but excuses going on. First, it was, well, I was misdiagnosed. Look here, you got $18 million this year, and you think they're trying to rush you? You didn't play for the most part a full season this year, and you're the go-to guy, you're the franchise, and you want to say that they didn't have your best interest at heart. Are you kidding me? I think he's getting bad advice. I think what you're starting to see now is an individual given a certain amount of advice, and it's not the right advice. Here it is. You were protected in San Antonio. You were able to come up during a time when you could still lean on Tim, Tony, and Manu.
I think
that's not all that critical, I have to say.
And like I said, it was one sentence. I think are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's all, like, that is the only thing that could really, like, make it construed as, like, shit talk or whatever. But you take that out of there. But I'm sure with, like, the Kawhi standard of criticism or whatever that's been developed, even with that out of there, it might have been too much. But I think, like, the are you kidding me made it sound like he's stupid, or like that he's being totally up his own ass about it. But either way, you're totally right about, like, the Clippers, that he's not going to go there anyways. And even if he would go there inevitably, like, what does it really say about your self-esteem as an organization that you will just, like, you will get rid of a guy off of one sentence
yeah.
a year before this guy's contract even comes up in the first place. It's a real, like I said, the NBA is mostly like high school stuff. This is why it's so fun. But it really is like...
It's like a guy dumping his girlfriend because he heard a girl he liked might be thinking about breaking up with her boyfriend.
Yeah. That was exactly what I was about to say. That is exactly what I was about to say.
And I believe that's what Jonathan Safran Foer did when he was developing that movie with Natalie Portman. He like left his wife and is like, I'm leaving you for Natalie Portman. And Natalie Portman's like,
whoa.
Wait, what? No, I have a boyfriend.
We haven't even kids.
What
are you talking about?
Just working on this you wrote a book about being a vegan.
I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's so pathetic. Like, but if anything, I'm just happy that get to an era where the Clippers go back to being the Clippers.
All right. I'm going to give you Bruce Bowen's comments
today. I like
that
being a bit of a joke. Yeah. And this is like putting him on the route there.
So Bowen said, Kawhi never said he wanted to play for the Clippers. He said he wanted to play for the Lakers, and unfortunately, you're going to run your organization based on hopes, maybe, and getting rid of others. Now, if I tore him down or that was disrespectful to him, that's one thing, but that's not the case. As an analyst, I'm supposed to talk about what I see and what I feel for this game that I love. And if you can't do that, what does that say about your organization? I don't think I'm that powerful where I would be the reason someone wouldn't want to go to a team. I mean, what are you doing? Are you playing or are you listening? And if you're listening, then listen to the words that are said and receive the constructive criticism, because that's my job. Now, if I'm just tearing a player down, that's one thing, but I don't think I'm big enough where someone would say, you know what? I'm not going there because Bruce Bowen is there. And
yes.
He's on the mic.
I mean,
I love Bruce Bowen.
It's a
man.
Nice humble brag there,
dude.
Too, of just like, I'm just Bruce Bowen, dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the point of all of this. And I mean, I've had an affinity for Bruce Bowen for a long time because, much like him, I had no ability as a basketball player yet.
Uh-huh.
Well, were you amazing at hurting people on purpose?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Like,
keep going.
It was like the only way that I could stay on the court is if I found extremely crafty ways to become a nuisance that other players would get technical fouls, and then I would like just like get rebounds and put up shots like 10 feet near the basket. And that was it. That was my entire game. So the fact that he like made it, that was the whole story around him. People were like, look at this guy. He doesn't even deserve to be here, but he just scrapped his way into it. I always had an affinity for that. But then hearing all this, that's the exact way I think about most of this stuff in the NBA. And he put it perfectly. And he's totally right. He's like, I'm just Bruce Bowen, dude. Like, if you're not even entrusting me to do the job that you assigned to me because of fear that you're not going to get this, something like, here's my question. Do you even want that player anyways? Like, why are so many of these teams tripping and falling over a guy who barely played last year? They don't even know if he is still injured or not when he exerts so much control that teams are literally firing their color commentators for that. Like, is it really worth it at the end of the day?
Also, he knows Kawhi. It's not like this is some random dude taking shots. Like, I'm sure he's met
him. But Tony Parker did too. That's what,
times.
If anything,
yeah.
I think maybe that's why the Clippers freaked out, because Tony Parker was on the same team with them. They know each other. And if even he couldn't get away with saying something vaguely critical, that ended up wanting to force his way out.
Now, in defense of the Clippers, maybe they didn't fire him for his comments, but they fired him because they were worried he was going to slide his foot under Kawhi's jump shot during a practice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, he'd been doing that to Ralph Lawler a lot. So his parting shot is great. I think if you can't get free agents in Los Angeles, that has nothing to do with Bruce Bowen. That has more to do with the organization.
Hell yeah, Bruce.
Wow, Bruce Bowen.
He's got it right, man. And really, Bruce Bowen should not be a color commentator for a specific team. Like, he's a guy who should be doing national stuff, because this is a great example of what is wrong with like the local broadcast versus national, is that the teams pick who calls the games for local television. So if the teams are picking that, then it's like, I mean, I don't mean to sound like some democratic socialist rant or something, but like,
no, please do.
There needs to be some sort of separation of who makes that call, because I think this is the first time that like this, something like this happened in a major way. That's really highlighting what's wrong with teams picking the announcers, whether it's play-by-play or color. Because how are you supposed to... It's like state TV. Like, how are you supposed to be honest about what's happening on the screen?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're living in fear that you're going to get fired for even being honest about what's happening.
Well, like, that's why I believe the Golden State Warriors should be able to have a referendum to get Bob Fitzgerald fired.
Yeah,
like, just, sure.
Get
yeah,
Bob
just
Fitzgerald
the initiative
fuck
process.
Out of there.
Get him out of here.
All right, and finally, let's talk about. I didn't even see this picture, this story, Sean, but this headline you have on here is maybe my favorite headline we've had
in
months. First round pick DeAndre Ayton drew a picture of himself dunking on Joel Embiid.
We'll tweet the picture when this episode comes out.
How good is it? What are we talking about?
Well, the
yeah,
first, the
let's
first,
pull this up.
Yeah, pull this up. The first description I got of it was like, man, I guess DeAndre Ayton's really talented. Like, he can, it's crazy that he can draw and play basketball.
Grant Hill, great piano player, basketball player.
Victor Oladipo has a beautiful voice.
Allen Iverson, incredible rapper.
Yeah, it's for a basketball card, I believe.
He drew his own basketball card?
Well, I think they have
is
like
he
some...
Honus Wagner? Like, how old is this thing?
They have, like, sketch cards. Anyway, this is the drawing.
Oh, Lord.
Is that one where you'd be like, this guy is an amazing talent?
It's like a Basquiat.
Okay. Well, for the listeners at home, it's either a Basquiat or it's something that his 11-year-old nephew did for him to show him that he thought he was cool. It is pretty rough.
It is a very funny picture, though, I think, because... The depiction of
Joel Embiid
like
is
flat. Yeah, he's
like
a
Muppet.
Sleeping Muppet.
He's
looking
flat.
Up like his eyes rolled and like just like, oh, geez.
He also gives himself one very short arm and really big calves.
And this is huge feet.
Look, there's a reason the feet are so huge, though.
Oh, of course.
He wanted to draw those pumas.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is all part of Puma's marketing. Weird marketing bullshit.
Hey, man.
Also, the hoop is full
back,
of spaghetti.
Yeah. Yes.
I think. Or streamers.
You know what? I said this was like a Basquiat. It's less like a Basquiat and more like a Daniel Johnston.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 It is like outsider art.
Yeah. It's definitely outsider art.
It is. Yeah, Daniel Johnston is. That's definitely spot on.
Because his head is very small.
He's like, yeah, it's. He's almost like Grandma Moses, but young.
It's very much like one of the Captain America drawings Daniel Johnston does.
Yeah. Especially with just the black and the white, so minimalist.
Except Captain America would be dunking on Satan, of course.
Yeah.
I just came from Austin. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's so funny. You're totally right about that Pumas thing, though. Like, I wouldn't even have thought of that, but that's the only thing that he did well in that drawing.
Yeah.
Was the Puma logo.
Yeah.
It's very funny that Joel Embiid's response was, "I love when kids dream big," all caps, for a guy who's
he's 19.
3 or 4 years younger than him.
He's 19, right?
Yeah.
Aiden, I mean, like, that's the other thing with some of this stuff. You forget how young they are.
But also,
that, like, when he does this dumb drawing, it's like, oh, man, he's, like, still just kind of a kid. Like,
but also, these guys should learn not to go at Joel Embiid when it comes to stuff like this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, go at him on basketball, sure, but when it comes to, like, trolling or jokes,
Joel
Embiid's going to win.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but this is – I like this because it's indirect. It's not like he tweeted it and added him or anything.
It was
something in the world. So this is like – but, dude, I want Joel Embiid to have feuds with all the other centers in the league. 29 different.
I prefer a fair amount of feuding in my NBA. That's why, I mean, I'm into Draymond more than most people for not being, you know, Bay Area diehards like yourselves. Because he does back it up a little bit, too, which I like. But, I mean, you know, I love Charles Oakley like any red-blooded American. Yeah. So, like, the more feuding, the better. And especially with bigs, I really enjoy, you know, like, the way that bigs...
Yeah, a big feud is way better than a guard feud.
Oh, yeah.
People love heavyweight fights more than welterweights, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah, because, like, That's why CJ McCollum can't really have a feud with anybody.
Yeah.
Because it's like...
Well, there's one person he can have a feud with that he's avoiding having a feud with.
Damian Lillard.
And that is Damian Lillard.
Oh,
that is the only feud that people would be interested in.
But you gotta... well, if anything, this might give you hope to think that CJ might figure it out. Big picture, because he hasn't pulled some like ego stuff with Damian Lillard yet, because he knows where his bread's buttered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that he's definitely the submissive one to Damian Lillard for a reason.
Uh-huh.
He's the bottom, you know.
All right, and we had one more question for you.
Please,
oh, yeah.
Your Instagram handle is @corndogobrian.
@corndogobrian. Yes.
Yeah. Which NBA player would you? Past or present,
yeah,
or future, if you want, yeah. I guess. Would you most like to eat a corn dog with?
Ooh, it's a great question, man. Oh, I don't know. I would think dead or alive, huh?
Yeah, whoever.
They can be killed by the corn dog during the meal too.
I might say this might not even be my favorite player, but I would say Anthony Mason. Because he seems like he would probably have the craziest stories, right?
Yes.
Like,
he is deceased, however.
Yeah.
But
well, you said
fine.
Dead
yeah,
or
yeah,
alive,
I did say
right?
Dead or alive. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dead, I think I probably would go with Anthony Mason because it seems nuts. Alive, I would probably say Charles Oakley. Similar reason, but Oak is like...
Are you going to be fighting people when you're
no,
eating
I want,
these corn dogs?
No, this is the thing. Like, if I'm hanging out with him, it means we're eating a corn dog. It's a very social, loose situation. Then I really enjoy spending time around like gruff older men mm-hmm. too
yeah.
that aren't like bastards anymore, but kind of used to be or whatever. That is like some of my favorite hangs, like old uncles who mm-hmm. were like used to be surly and now they're just like hangout guys.
Oak.
So like both of those like are similar in that way.
Oak has like a lot of time for fans too in the limited
and
amount.
Oak likes
I've
to knock them
him.
Back, you know. He likes
yeah,
to have
yeah.
a couple, you know. So I think Oak would be the best alive one. And then Anthony Mason dead just because it's like the way that his life was, it seemed nuts, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
My choice is Robin Lopez because
what?
I think we're at Disneyland, then
oh.
his favorite place on earth. Because that's, uh-huh. you know, he's taken me to the corn dog. You
so,
know
you,
what I mean?
So you want more of like a wholesome good time
yeah,
hang with
I want to spend all day with Robin Lopez at Disneyland. That's what I'm saying.
That's the other thing too is there's as much as I love the NBA, there's like so few players I actually would like want to be friends with. You know what I mean?
Well, we have talked about this before with our friend John Wilms, and we've all decided that we think like the Lopez twins are one of the few NBA players that would actually be interested in hanging out with us.
That's kind of okay. Now I'm starting to see the appeal of this Robin Lopez. Yeah,
I think like of guys that would tolerate it and not like be made time. The NBA player who's been the nicest to me
yeah.
personally has been Steven Jackson.
Yeah.
But
he
remembers
he's
everyone he
yeah.
meets. Yeah. Like,
but even still, like, I don't know if I want to be friends with Steven
no,
Jackson.
Well,
I don't want to, like, die
Steven
in a strip
Jackson,
club.
He doesn't want to hang out with me. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
I
like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's true. It's
like, I want somebody who's not going to be like, get this over. I remember when I used to work at a nonprofit, one of the lawyers there at some, like, school fundraiser bid for a lunch with Harrison Barnes just because she was like, I actually have teenage sons and this will be so much less awkward for him
sure.
than one of these dads
yeah.
being like, Harrison, we're getting lunch. And like, no, yeah. no, he can just.
So what's it like? When
but
you're...
here's
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, like this 21-year-old could just go to lunch with a 17-year-old
yeah.
and it's way less.
So here's the thing, though. I actually think Harrison Barnes is another one of the guys that like.
Yeah, well, he goes to comedy
yeah,
clubs
like,
more than you do.
Yeah, he listens to like the Bill Burr podcast. And
sure,
stuff.
I would
like,
want to be friends.
Watches
with...
Game of Thrones. Like, I can talk to Harrison Barnes for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't aware of that. Well, and he's from Iowa. Him and Dougie McBuckets
yeah.
grew up together and stuff. So yeah, him and I might have more in common than I would consider initially. Doug
basically,
McDermott
what I'm saying
seems
is
like,
Harrison Barnes is a fucking dork. And
but
like
even
I think
the one
I know how to talk to a fucking dork
for sure. But even it's like with some of these guys that are kind of obvious dorks in the NBA, or some of them that I could like get along with it. Some they're either like too square or too dorky. I don't know if I really want to be like Dougie McBuckets. I probably would have a lot in common with, but I don't want to know him.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, well, you also might just like.
He seems like kind of like, what is this? Like, he's not, we're not going to be talking about like punk rock or pro wrestling. I don't know what he's into. Like,
doesn't Doug McDermott also feel like a guy that you might just meet? Like, you don't have to use your corndog wish
on
Doug McDermott.
Yeah, exactly,
like it just might happen naturally.
I've met Kyle Korver already because I went to Creighton basketball camp every year when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They like you just can kind of come into proximity to these people, especially with Creighton connections, because my family went there and my aunt was the roommate, or her roommate was head coach of the women's basketball team for years there and stuff. So it's like, I'm not blowing the corn dog on McBuckets, man. I would want to be friends with like Blake Griffin if he wasn't doing stand up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Like before he punched his friend in the face. Those two things really made me
nuts. I'm okay with the punch in the friend in the face.
I don't like that.
But what if you're that friend?
Bully. I bet that guy's a jerk.
But think about it. Like, the friend that he punched in the face is the kind of friend that I probably would be to Blake Griffin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, after the punch in the face and him, like, eating up stand-up spots and getting profiles written about it like he's on some noble pursuit, I'm like, I'm out on Blake Griffin, dude.
Yeah, dude. Just for Laughs is a competitive festival.
No, that's where he started. That's like his open mic.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I think Metal World Peace is also a good corndog.
He's like, I think he's too crazy.
Too intense. I mean, I'm an intense person, but he's like Queensbridge intense.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what, like, if anything, I think like Metal World Peace, it might seem nuts. It might be a funny story, but going through it, you'd, like, I got trapped on a Greyhound for 17 hours with a crackhead one time, and it was like, I think it'd be more like that experience of, like, he's, like, talking about a lot of stuff, and I can't really make a ton of sense of it, but I'm like, oh, okay, whoa, all right, man, like.
A corn dog's a short meal, though. You're not even, like, you know, you can eat a corn dog. People eat a corn dog pretty fast.
Yeah, I guess, well, then am I even going to get a chance to know Oakley? Well, yeah, maybe if we order beers while we get the corn dog, I get like one or two into them before the corn dog. And corn dog kind of salty, so that'll make you want to drink more.
Yeah.
Maybe we get a second corn dog. Oak, man, I'm still hungry. Oak, what about you? You want corn dog? Oh, I'll get them. Don't worry about it.
Do you
want
to get some fries maybe
with
that?
One of my favorite bars in New York is Rudy's in Hell's Kitchen, and it's because pitchers are $8. And you get free hot dogs, Nathan's hot dogs, and that's like the kind of hang I would want to have with Oak, like splitting a pitcher, a couple of hot dogs.
Other people I thought of, I think Ricky Rubio would be fun to have a corn dog with because he'd be so positive. He'd be like, "Oh, your hair looks so good today."
Yeah, he'd be like, "They have honey mustard." You know,
I've never had food on a stick.
Oh boy,
this is like tapas, but wrapped up. My choice for all of those things is always Dirk, but like, but that, I feel like that just goes.
I
would
have thought
saying.
Dirk, but I don't even know if I saw it when I first aired, but there's this old Grantland thing about like Dirk and Steve Nash, and they're like having dinner out or something like that, and they're just talking about their careers and what could happen, and it made me not want to hang out with Dirk at all. It was so boring. Like. And same thing with Steve Nash.
Nash is the boring one.
Yeah.
Steve Nash.
If anything,
is the
he brought Dirk
equation.
Down because it was not.
No, that's what I mean. I think Steve Nash is fucking boring.
Yeah, he flew once Nash was gone, dude. Like,
the other person I thought of, Boris Diaw.
Oh, yeah.
I think you could really have a lot of fun with Boris Diaw.
Also, he's
plus,
probably
he might
like.
Eat like five or six of them.
Yeah.
I bet he, like, even, I could imagine him having, like, a condiment caddy that he carries around. He's like, well, I have an espresso machine in the car.
Well, now if it's about the corn dog, if it's about the corn dog experience, I just had a completely new thought. A Donald Foyle.
Oh, he'd be reading way too much poetry.
Well, think about it, though. He's a bigger dude, so he's probably going to be slamming a lot of dogs.
Uh-huh.
He might be one of the most cultured NBA players of all time. So you think about, like, stimulating conversation. Somebody's going to want to hang for a while.
Uh-huh.
He wrote a book on how to invest your money.
I'd
be afraid he would just talk to me about that the whole time.
I'm okay with that. Because it's better than Dikembe. He's going to be trying to get me to invest in some pyramid scheme on blood diamonds or something, you know?
All right. That's it, right?
That seems good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you guys had like a final horn or something like time.
No.
I mean, I have a horn sound effect I can put in.
Kevin, what do you want to plug?
I'm currently on the road. I'll be performing at High Plains Comedy Festival next weekend.
So fun. If you're in Colorado,
so come check
go
that
see
out.
All of my friends at that festival.
Yes. Yeah. But not Joey. Joey will not be there.
No.
August 23rd through the 25th. Follow me on Instagram at Corndog O'Brien for all other dates. I'll be in Nebraska, my home state, first week in September, doing shows in Omaha, Lincoln, and Kearney.
Omaha is... like seriously, such a good place to do comedy, and just like a great city.
Yeah, it's probably the best smaller city in the entire.
When
Midwest.
Is Saddle Creek gonna release stand up?
Well, friends, no, I don't have. However, I will be at Oliver's in Omaha on Wednesday, September 5th. The show's at 8:30, and that bar is an institution, and you'll probably see many musicians who have been on Saddle Creek there because some of them own the place. Mm-hmm. So that'll be my connection to them. And then, yes, I'll be giving the hard sell to release an EP to them next year, hopefully. I doubt they'll take it, but I'm putting it
You
out
should
there.
Do a split.
Well, here's the rub. I would have to find another comedian from Nebraska to put the split out with, as opposed to like doing it with a band.
Jeff Wattenhofer.
Jeff Wattenhofer? Yeah.
Oh. All right. I'll talk to Jeff. Him and I could get up on that Saddle Creek. So, yeah, because some of my favorite Saddle Creek stuff was splits, so
yeah,
that'd be very cool. That Bright Eyes Neva De Nova split. Oh, baby. That's the stuff.
A good one.
This has been a very narrow podcast. I've just now realized, like... For some reason, my folksiness really came through. It's been about corn dogs, Nebraska,
Creighton basketball.
Oh my God!
Are the Nuggets like the team of Nebraska? Or
not
is
really.
Just...
So there's like the split in the state too, like between the East and the West, uh-huh. Especially with football, like between Broncos and Chiefs. It's almost like directly. Like you can look at a data map of like Facebook posts of people and stuff, and it's almost like a direct split down the state. And it's a little bit similar like that with basketball, but people aren't like huge professional basketball fans in Nebraska either. So like people, if they are into the NBA, they're just into it in like a broad way, kind of like I was as a kid. And then some people might be in the Nuggets, and then on the eastern part of the state, it's like it becomes Bulls country pretty quick.
What's
through
the,
like
I
Iowa?
Would, oh, right, because it's
all,
so,
Iowa's. It's all Bulls fans totally.
What's the big Is there a big Nebraska city on the west side of the state?
No. I grew up in probably the biggest one, and it's 25,000 people.
Okay.
Yeah, it was real small town. It was like we were halfway between Omaha and Denver, so like literally the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, I've been to Omaha twice.
Yeah, Omaha is great. So if anybody's in Omaha, come check me out. We can talk Creighton hoops all night long. Oh, damn, I have a vintage Creighton basketball jersey on me. I should have wore that over here. I could have shown you guys.
How long does it take to get to those casinos?
It's just right across the river, friend.
Hardly
any ever traffic, so maybe 5 minutes if you're really hustling.
Sean, what do you want to plug?
I'll be in San Francisco the second weekend in September. You can see me at the Up on the Roof show on the 8th. I'll be doing the Punchline Showcase on the 9th. From Shinola at the Right Spot on the 10th. And at the beautiful Throckmorton Theater in Marin on September 11th. Never forget to come out and check out that
dates
show.
On dates on dates.
And then as for me, you can always follow me on Twitter at Frankie Muniz, where one day ago I tweeted, I'm 7 hours into a 10-day cleanse and I'm already miserably starving. So that Twitter account should be pretty terrible for the next 10 days.
He mainly eats cereal too.
He's
toasted. Friends. I think that he doesn't like food.
He has said that he doesn't like food. He also cannot, figure out when iced tea goes bad, if you remember.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he ate poison. He drank poison iced tea that one time. All right.
Him and CJ McCollum need to hang out.
They should get a corn dog together.
Yeah. These guys need a friend, both of them.
Trust the process.
Trust
and,
the process.
Shut it down. Let's go listen to Bright Eyes. The calendar hung itself.
We were friends, talked for hours without end about his latest story how to deal with fame and glory. All the girls who adored him catered to his every whim. Nothing he could lose, all he needed to do was choose. I should have known, I should have known, I should have thrown myself across his tr-
Daddy, daddy's always happy, daddy, daddy's always happy, daddy, daddy's always happy, daddy, daddy's always happy.
Thanks. I should have known, we believed and didn't see through the lies he told us all.
Daddy, daddy's always happy, daddy, daddy's always happy, daddy, daddy's always happy, daddy, daddy's always happy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.